Time for hour two of KSCO Presents the Dr. Future Show.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO Presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show, folks. In this hour, we have on Catherine Austin Fitz, president of Solari, publisher of the Solari Report, managing editor of the Solari Investment Advisory Services. You might have heard her on our late night show, Coast to Coast, here in KSCO and environs. Last time we caught up with Catherine was at the Architects of the New Paradigm.
Architects of the New Paradigm.
And she was there speaking about the new global space economy. So welcome. Welcome, Catherine, to our show. And Mrs. Future, I didn't have a chance to talk to you at the last event, but my wife had a chance to catch up with you a little bit, and it just brings back old memories. We know you back from the previous chapter in your life 10 years earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Boy, you've really come full circle, Catherine. You know? And
the whole time it's just dealing with money. So it just goes to show you how much fun you can have if you try and warn people about the housing bubble.
What a great way of putting it. Well, that's an interesting take on fun. Starring in your own action movie, right?
You're recovering, right, Catherine? We're not...
Yes, yeah. My voice sounds... To me, it sounds almost back to normal, but I'm sure everyone else tells me I still sound like I'm from Green Acres.
Well, I don't know. You know, there was a time when people called that sultry, and, you know, they thought it was very attractive.
Okay. Well, I'm very sultry. I'm much more sultry than normal. But anyway, so, yeah, believe it or not, I only get sick if I fly domestically. I never get sick. And I really felt to come out to the conference, it was too far to drive. You know, normally I drive to California and back. Mm-hmm. So that's 70 hours of driving. And I tell you, it would have been faster because I got this when I flew back from the Architects of the New Paradigm. No. That's how long I've had it. So yeah. Anyway, so next time I'm driving to California.
It's safer. Yeah, you don't believe in wearing one of those little safety masks on the plane?
Not only is it safer, but I'll tell you, 6 days of driving when you're talking on the phone and getting a huge amount done is better than, you know, 6 weeks of laryngitis. So,
for sure. Anyway. Absolutely.
It'll be a lot easier with telepathy. But
yes, there you go.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask you, it's interesting to hear you talk about the space, here we go, on your cover of the Solari Report, because we've been covering it from another angle where there has been a technological renaissance in making space more accessible than ever before, and that it seems like a natural progression for our species to move in that direction. And then you come at it from a slightly different perspective about how global investment is involved and the missing $8 trillion. Could you tell us a little about that for our audience?
Sure. And I've given 2 speeches on this topic. One is available publicly.
I gave
a speech at the Secret Space Program conference out in San Mateo in 2014. It's available on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And basically what I did is walk through the history of the black budget in the United States and the extent to which I believe our economy has been organizing around our activities in space. They've just been secret. When Kennedy administration, right after Kennedy was assassinated, we peaked at, I think, 4.5% of the GNP, you know, going to space, of the federal budget, going into space-related activities, and now it's about 0.5%. I think it kept growing, I just think it went dark. Mm-hmm. And I think so much of our economy since 1947 has been driven by the need to get secret money, whether it's the $8.5 trillion missing from the federal government or the bailout. You know, when the bailouts happened, we supposedly gave $27 trillion to the banks to refinance out housing paper when $8 trillion would have paid off all the single-family mortgages in the country. Mm-hmm. So why did we need to pay 3 or 4 times more than all the residential mortgages in the country? So I believe that our economy is organized for 50 years, 70 years or more around on what we're doing in space and the importance of keeping it secret and the importance of keeping the technology coming out of it secret. It's one of the things I tried to describe in the wrap-up. I came into this, as you guys know, trying to prevent narcotics trafficking and sort of rounding up people using the war on drugs and stuffing them into prison, in my opinion, in violation of the law. Mm-hmm. And what, you know, I kept trying to figure out how can we back narcotics trafficking out of neighborhoods. And what I discovered was, of course, that the neighborhood drug business was being run by Tony Soprano, and Tony Soprano was financing James Bond. And if you tried to stop narcotics trafficking, the next thing you know, you had black helicopters coming down on your head.
Yeah, it was too
and
much of
so
the.
So my question was,
the ecosystem was already in place there. It was. Didn't want to be right. disturbed.
Yeah, right. Talking about your question, why are the black helicopters coming down on your head when you're trying to get people to understand how to stop drugs coming into their local neighborhoods? So what is that connection there?
Right. It's funny. I had a former enforcement agent come in when I was in Washington, a beautiful mansion in downtown Washington, and they came and gave a speech about the Dark Alliance allegations and the narcotics trafficking into South Central LA in the 90s and the different disclosures around that. And while they were speaking, you know, I had this wonderful living room salon full of partners in Washington law firms and investigative reporters and sort of a creme de la creme of Washington society. And while he was talking, two black helicopters came and hovered over my roof garden.
Oh, boy.
It was the ultimate in status in Washington hostess when the black helicopters hover over your roof garden.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, right. Listen, it's time for a break.
As opposed to a lonely drone, yeah, a real helicopter. Oh.
All right, folks, listen, we're going to be right back after a quick break with more from Catherine Austin Fitz and trying to unlock why those black helicopters were coming to her neighborhood. We'll be right back. Dr. Future Show.
Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking with Catherine Austin Fitz. Now, a couple other terms that we heard, well, I heard for the first time, Catherine, that were something called the shriek-o-meter. and the you were talking about globalists, which I've heard from a couple other people as well, and the Treaty of Westphalia.
And, of course, how this all brings us back to our own neighborhood.
Yeah, well, we
have place-based economics, self-determination, and sovereignty through taking charge of our own backyards.
But if you can start with the shriek-o-meter, I'd appreciate it.
Okay, the shriek-o-meter. You have to see the picture. I'm sure you've seen it, the wrap-up.
Okay.
What happened, you know, I started to use the term the shriek-o-meter during the Ebola scare. The Republicans were trying to win the Senate.
Yeah.
And what we just got was greater. If you looked at the polls, they were sort of neck and neck with the Democrats, and they couldn't break out, and it was very important for them to win the Senate. And all of a sudden, about 6 weeks before they came, suddenly we have the Ebola scare, and it gets worse and worse and worse. If you looked at the financial press, which is what I follow, the top headline on all the financial press was Ebola, Ebola, Ebola. And meantime, from business newsletters, we were getting a message saying, you know, it won't be relevant to your business year this year, just ignore it. And what you realized was they're just trying to scare everybody into voting Republican, and it worked. It was a very successful tactic. And of course, now we see it even worse with ISIS and many other things. But it happens. I think it's important to understand it happens because the official reality and reality are so separate. And we're in a situation where politicians can't say to the people, look, here's the reality of what's going on, and here's what we have to do. Here's the responsible thing to do. Because that would require sort of breaking out of the official reality and talking about reality.
But this fear and entrainment measure you're talking of.
Yeah, what they do is they use entrainment and fear to get the result they need. And that way,
just more money for the military, for the black budget, for protection, to keep ourselves safe, that kind of.
Yeah, it's more central. It's more juice for the pro-centralization team. So it helps them centralize control or shift to whoever is doing the loudest shrieking. So now if you look at the campaign, to a certain extent, the more people shriek, the more attention and votes they're getting, although I think entrainment is probably evolved. And one of the reasons.
Though you get a reputation for shrieking after a while, right? I mean.
Well, so far it's working. So I think the reason I keep trying to bring people back to their neighborhood financial information is the way to start to break out of the official reality and get back to reality and get out of bubble economics is to bring transparency to the federal budget just for your neighborhood. And let me just tell a couple stories.
For our city council, that sort of thing, on that level?
No. So every year you send a disclosure document to the federal government that says, here's how all my money works. Mm-hmm. And the federal government is required by law to send you a document back saying, here's all how our money works, except they are in violation of that law and they never do. The reality is you don't just need a copy of the financial statements for the whole federal government. You need financial statements for your congressional district because that's where you vote for representation. So you need to see sources and uses of federal monies for your congressional district and for your state, which is how you vote for political representation. If you go to a town hall meeting with your congressman, if you don't have the sources and uses of federal money and you see how the federal money works in your neighborhood, you don't know how to have an intelligent conversation with them to hold them accountable for their performance. So when you buy a stock, you get an annual report that says, here's how your money worked. Well, you need to get the same thing from the federal government, but you need to get it according to the area through which you vote for political representation. So let me just give you an example.
Is there an easy way in which I can find out what projects in my neighborhood have federal money behind them? Is there like a particular...
Well, there was in 1996, I built a software tool called Community Wizard.
Oh.
And you could come into Community Wizard online and you could say, okay, well, you know, my neighborhood is my congressional district and my zip code. And you could access all the federal databases and access the data related to your congressional district or zip code. And you could play with tools to show you, you know, using GIS software.
Nice. That would be a very nice
project.
Yeah, that would be a very nice form of transparency. Yeah. And so what happened to that?
The Department of Justice seized our offices, stole the software, kept it under lock and key under court control for 6 years. Wow. And when I finally got it out, the most valuable pieces, it disappeared permanently. So which tells you that this idea really can work. Okay.
Well, transparency then, maybe today, huh? Maybe now with Bernie and Trump.
But we don't need the federal government to do this. Citizens can do this. Mm-hmm. We can get that data. We can aggregate that data. We can start to look at the data. Let me show you what that data is going to show. Let me give you some examples.
Okay.
In 37 states, if you're on food stamps, lots of people in California on food stamps, and you call customer service because you have a problem with the program or you have a question, you will get somebody in India working for JPMorgan Chase who's doing a job that if you had that job, you wouldn't need food stamps. Mm-hmm. So government is paying you to not work or to be unemployed, and they're paying somebody in India with a markup to JPMorgan Chase to do a job you could do. Mm. That's not economic for the federal government or the taxpayers. Let me give you another example. When we were lead financial advisor and when I was assistant secretary of housing, we would regularly find neighborhoods where the federal government was paying $250,000 per apartment to construct new apartments when $50,000 would buy and rehab a single family foreclosed FHA property. And I took the opportunity to switch the money to the assistant of the person running that program and said, look, we can get five homes for the price of one in all these different neighborhoods. She looked at me and she said, how would we generate fees for our friends?
Yeah.
Okay, so let me keep going. There are so many neighborhoods now with digital telecommunications where somebody is working, like, you know, they're working two jobs to make $40,000 a year.
Yeah.
They're paying taxes to the federal government. And then the federal government is turning around and hiring a contractor and paying them $25 to $150 per hour to do something somebody in that neighborhood could do for $10 to $15 an hour plus health care and would be delighted to do. And with telecommunications, you can just port that job back into that community. There's no reason to send all the money to Washington to pay a corporate contractor to do a job that somebody in that neighborhood could do for much less.
Decentralize that procedure.
And also, to spend the money locally is really the bottom line, is to just realize that local commerce is created, every time a dollar is spent locally, that dollar is earned locally. And therefore, the earnings in the local economy go up. And if that money is spent at a national store and then that dollar leaves the local economy, there's no income in the local economy and the amount of money goes down. And that's why local economies need local spending. Right,
but you want to do those things locally where you can be the most productive. So what I'm saying is whenever local can be more productive than national, move it local. Mm-hmm. If it's more productive to do it national or international, I would argue move it national or international, then have the local folks. And I'll tell you one of the most important things for local, and that is if you come to a place like Tennessee, it's true for California, but you guys have been better at it than we have. Mm. One of the biggest problems here is the extent to which all the food that food stamps buy is being shipped in, you know, from 1,000 to 2,000 miles away, particularly trucking in from South America, when food safety rules have consistently shut down local businesses and prevented the local farms from selling to local consumers. And that is one of the biggest reasons for our healthcare expense. The healthcare expense is flying up in this country. And part of it is because people aren't eating fresh food because their neighbors are not making money growing fresh food for them. When in fact, if you look at the whole ecosystem, it's much more economic to allow the local food system to develop, make sure people are healthier, and then not have to truck all that money in federally controlled food programs. So
what about
agriculture?
Farmers markets? Right, you see that as part of that equation?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So the more we can waive locally federal and in many cases state rules as well to allow willing consumers and willing farmers to be able to sell to each other and basically sign waivers that waive them out of all of this unbelievably ridiculous food safety regulations that, of course, is making us all less healthy and we're all getting sick. Anyway, there are hundreds of examples. Every neighborhood is different. And that's why I am so adamant about, if you look at the federal government, there is a task force, there used to be a task force of webmasters, I'm assuming there still is, but if every federal agency just took the financial information and budget information, as well as program information that is required to be available to the public and made it accessible, and that information by county and by congressional district. We all have smartphones. We all have ways of downloading this information. And we and our neighbors all started something called participatory budgeting, where we start looking at how the money works and say, okay, where can we save money for the federal government? How can we reduce the cost to the federal budget, but do it in a way that generate more business and employment locally and build up the farms and small businesses locally? It's got to be a win-win for both sides. And when I tell you there are thousands and thousands of opportunities, the campaign is the perfect time to go to when candidates are coming through, when your congressman is coming through, go to the town hall meeting, go to the meeting and say, why can't I get the financial information for my congressional district? Because I assure you the fundraisers have it.
All right, Catherine, we need to go to our middle of the hour break, and we'll be back. If you folks have questions and stuff for Catherine, Austin Fitz on KSCO.
Feel free to enter the stream of awareness.
Yes, we'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Dr. Fisher Show. We have a caller and a question for you. We're talking with Catherine Austin Fitz. Currently, I guess you might call it improving our local economy. Foster Gamble and Danny Sheehan are both in our county, Catherine. I think you met them both at the conference where we're all at. Now, how do you see we might best synergize with their efforts in creating a better economy?
Or how might we?
Or how about we, from your perspective, as knowing Danny Sheehan's work and Foster Gamble with the Thrive Network?
I don't know. I'm not aware of what they're doing locally. Mm-hmm. I think if they were interested in some of the inventors they're in touch with prototyping new energy technology in the community, that would be one great way to coordinate with them. Danny Sheehan on one of the panels said that they were using some of that technology on one of the Lakota reservations. Now, that may be because it's a different sovereign nation under the law that they're doing it there and not in their local community. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I would think that would be one way to do it.
Okay.
Okay, good. Okay, thank you. Okay, we have a caller as well.
Yes, Catherine, let's say hello to Steve. Hello, Steve. Welcome
Hi,
to
guys.
The Dr. Future Show.
Thank you for my call, Catherine.
Sure.
Okay, you're on with Catherine.
Okay, great. Hey, Catherine, I have a question for you on the topic. As you're talking about the subject, many of us are concerned about the Internal Revenue Service and the Federal Reserve and how they really sap the labors of the people and redirect it to the international banking system. It seems like with those two fangs of the vampire in our neck, that even with some of these great things that we're talking about, like open resource and, you know, bartering and some of the creative things that you're talking about, that that's the majority of the steam of our labors is basically, you know, sapped and diverted to other covert efforts. And so how can a people who are industrious and creative and survive in a situation where the value of the currency continues to get sapped by fiat currency and just the vitality of the economy basically draining our lifeblood, our energy?
Catherine?
Well, what you're referring to is that we operate within a model called the central banking warfare model, and that is a model that involves printing lots of fiat currency and using that fiat currency to swap for real assets or real labor. Now, I would point out that one of the challenges here and one of the great sort of hypocrisies of the whole population, whether it's the leadership or the general population, is for many, many decades, that basement process has worked to the advantage of the general population in America. So we went around the world and traded fiat currency for hard commodities and basically got hard commodities for free by simply printing paper off a computer, in essence, and trading it for commodities. So there's kind of a multiple personality disorder in the body politic, because when you deal with the sort of the voting population on that topic, everybody wants the subsidy to continue to flow from the global game. They just don't want it to hurt them locally. So that's part of your challenge. And I think it's important to understand that the subsidy has for many decades flowed more to Americans than we'd like to admit. At the same time, the debasement of the currency is really draining everybody. It's part of what I call the slow burn. And the important way to protect yourself from it in this kind of environment is to basically trade hard for hard. So the more you don't keep your money in things that are getting debased, but keep them in things which are sort of inflationary protected from that kind of debasement. You want to absolutely make sure to stay out of debt and not get sucked into the debt game. And the other thing you want to do is make sure your labor, your skills are constantly upgrading, because one of the ways that people get debased is as technology changes, if you're not in the sort of new economy with those skills, then you're in real trouble and falling behind, and that's where you get to base badly. I'm laughing because, son, I'm thinking of the first time I met you, watching you do all the audio, all the video. But, oh, my God, this woman is a genius.
So Whatever it takes, that's what I say.
Well, but if everybody had your learning speed, I mean, you clearly didn't look like anybody who woke up and said, I want to go to engineering school. But to do what you love doing, you would have said, okay, well, I can do this and I can do that. I can do that. You know, I mean, it was so impressive. But you were somebody saying, okay, I'm just going to follow the flow and I'm going to master all this stuff. And it just seemed to me you clearly have a very high learning speed. Is that right?
Yes, that's true. I'm in the think different generation, yeah, and that's the world we live in.
She teaches me every day, Catherine.
Exactly. So she's just like doing the next thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, so you have to have a very high learning metabolism to stay ahead of the debasement. And if you know that and you organize your life around that, you know, it's great. If you don't, then you get left behind and then it's a real struggle and you get debased. So this is an environment where to beat the debasement curve, you have to have a very entrepreneurial mentality. And I think you just need to know that, because it is a treadmill. Mm-hmm. Now, the reality is, to change that treadmill, you've got to get back to looking at the local economy and the real economy and saying, okay, what has real value and what adds real value? Unfortunately, there's an enormous number of people in the real population who are, you know, I think now we have over 100 million people who survive on government checks. And it's funny, I always, one of my favorite commentators, Franklin Sanders, says, all government checks come with a sock in the jaw. Because basically they pay you, whether it's as a corporate contractor, or, you know, if you're getting a subsidy check, they basically, over long periods of time, they pay you to get stupid. Mm. And one of the reasons I've always tried to stay away, ever since I spent my time litigating with the federal government, I try and stay away from government money, is if you're going to stay at the head of that entrepreneurial learning curve, you've got to stay away from government, government programs, government mentality. Mm.
Great. All right. Well, thanks so much. We have another caller here, one of our favorite locals. Hello, Billy Sunshine.
Billy
welcome
Sunshine.
To the show.
Hey, welcome. Catherine, meet Billy.
Hello, Futures. Great guest. Catherine, you made such an important point that I need to re-stress it. And that goes back to when we had the housing crisis, the government could easily have given everybody who was an adjustable mortgage a pass-through to give to the banks so that A, the banks would not fail, and B, the housing market would not have crashed. And the fact that they didn't do that is just utterly devastating.
I believe what happened was a financial coup d'etat. So the housing bubble was engineered. If you go online and look at my online book called Dylan Reed and the Aristocracy of Stock Profits, It's at dunwalkie.com. I describe the fact that we all knew that we needed to re-engineer the economy and we needed to help the middle class re-engineer the skills. And instead of doing that, we said, you know, let's have a housing bubble and suck all the capital out of the country. And I tell stories where I was told by insiders that a decision had been made to, you know, that they'd given up on the country. They're moving all the money out starting in the fall of 1998 when the 8.5 trillion went going. But I think the housing bubble was engineered with enormous amounts of housing fraud. I've explained all of that in online articles. And I think they basically took $40 trillion by a variety of different mechanisms, including the bailouts.
Absolutely. And there was an incredible mortgage for it.
Right. And so basically what you were doing was, with the bailouts, you were refinancing out the fraud. You know, you weren't dealing with a real problem. You were refinancing out the fraud. And so you stole the money, and then you used fraudulent securities to do it, and then you refinance out the fraudulent securities, and you move, my estimate is they moved $40 trillion. Now, let me explain how much $40 trillion is. At a 5% yield of dividends and interest, it's a big enough endowment to run a private global government on a just-do-it basis. So I think they were re-engineering. You know, it's interesting. I tell the story in the Dylan Reed book about the largest president of CalPERS, largest pension fund in the country, and certainly the largest in California, told me at a meeting in 1997 that they'd given up on the country. They're moving all the money out starting in the fall. And I had thought at the time he meant all the money they could move legally. Now I think, no, they just basically said, we're taking the money out and then we'll encourage everybody to stew in their own juices and deal with how they get the thing on a financially responsible basis after we get the assets out. And if you look at what's going on in the campaign, we have two contestants saying we should have a balanced budget amendment, a constitutional amendment. And sure, now that they've taken the $40 trillion, now they'll require a balanced budget. We'll balance it on the backs of everybody who wasn't a beneficiary of that $40 trillion. So that's what I think happened.
Mm. Yeah. And, you know, what they're doing with it, of course, is they're building a starship to escape the asteroid strike of 2020.
You think?
that's what my 2020 vision gameplay is about.
I do think a fair amount of the money is going into space and into the underground economy. You need to support that platform. So
that's why
our end wrap-up this year is the space-based economy, and I explained a lot of that.
I wonder, is it possible to move all the money off-planet? Like, to some server on the moon?
Well, you would need to move it off planet. You just need to move it into the orbital platform. So it would be, I don't know what to have the 3-mile rule that flows to the ocean. I remember once upon a time we used to fly 3 miles out so we could have a meeting outside the 3-mile zone.
Right. Thinking of parties along those lines.
So one of the questions I've asked about that orbital platform and now the suborbital platform, is this the new offshore haven? Because if you have cloud in the orbital platform and you have a different legal jurisdiction,
you
could affect that.
That's what I was thinking.
You could affect that offshore haven.
Virtual country.
Yeah.
And we got to go for a break. We're talking with Catherine Austin Fitz. Catherine, we'll be right back.
All right. Stay tuned with the Dr. Future Show. Thanks for listening.
Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking to Catherine Austin Fitz. Catherine, would it make any sense for local businesses to join together in one website for sales?
It depends. I think what you want to do is you need to have the relationships and trust that make sense. Makes to aggregate back functions like relational database marketing and different other sort of what I would call business of the business. There are a lot of economies of scale on accounting, on other systems things, as well as sort of legal and financial advice. So there are ways that businesses can aggregate. Whether or not it makes sense to do a joint marketing through website really depends on what the clusters are and how it works. Normally you have the Chamber of Commerce doing something like that that suffices for a community.
Yeah, so if you want to go to your town, you'd be able to, I guess it would be the equivalent of, I don't know, I guess it's kind of a Yellow Pages in a way.
Right, usually between the town website and the chamber, where I think merchants can do a lot together is when they sponsor different events that cause a cluster to attract together. That's where it can really add some energy, because where you're constantly having events and causing things to happen, it makes it much more lively.
That's
where joint marketing can help.
Interesting. Okay, joint marketing. How about local currencies? Are you in favor of such things?
Well, local currencies can add tremendous energy, but they create real political problems. Where you've seen them work, you end up running into, you know, having a fight with regulators, and that's what you want to avoid. So, you know, one of my favorites used to be out near you. Is not in your direct area, but there was a neighborhood where there was a fabulous local bank, but a great deal of the neighborhood was banking with big banks that were doing a lot of the mortgage fraud. And I said, look, why don't y'all go buy the stock of the local bank, because it was publicly traded, then get everybody to shift to the local bank so the stock goes up and take your profits and use that money to, you know, to do another local thing. And it was interesting because the local bank that was publicly traded, a third of their profits went to scholarships at the local college.
Wow.
So to me, it seemed like a no-brainer, because if you looked at how much money they could transfer over and what a great pop it could generate on stock, you know, it just seemed to me like an easy thing to do, but it never caught on. I think now, as people are willing to drill down and look at the money harder, you could start to do those things.
That's interesting. When you say the stock is publicly traded, but it's a local business, right? I guess I don't really know how that works.
Local stocks or something like that?
Yeah. Like where do you buy local stock? You have to buy it directly from the company?
No, in your brokerage account. I could have gone into my Schwab account or whatever your brokerage account is, and I could have bought that stock just like you buy any other stock.
I see.
So it's publicly traded. It's publicly available now. Right. You know, some local businesses are publicly traded, some are not. It really depends on who you are. That's why I say it's very particular, because what you want to do is you want to get together and say, okay, how can we make money making our neighborhood strong? Because if you can make money making your neighborhood strong, then you can make your neighborhood strong. Because, you know, we all have to earn a paycheck. So I think what you want to focus on is where can the small business, because it's winning back government activities, it's not economic to send it to Washington or send it international, but you can draw it back in a way that makes everybody money, or that, you know, just makes the local guys money, because you're switching your money from a bank that frankly doesn't give 2 cents about you to a bank that not only cares about you but is willing to send dividends to support the local college.
What about,
so you really have to map out what's going on in your neighborhood and where the productivity is that you can support. You want to remember, it's like blood in a body. So when your blood is circulating, right now we're sending the blood to the toes and the fingers. We want to send it back to the heart and lungs. So you want to look at what are the really productive businesses and farms and enterprises and activities in our community, and how can we start incrementally flowing more blood to them?
Yeah, we have organizations here called Think Local First that do a lot of the things that you're talking about, just trying to get people to know each other as neighbors, act locally, buy local, spend their money in the local economy, et cetera, et cetera. What do you think about the multi-level marketing structure? Does that fit into any kind of Solari scenarios that you've thought through?
I like to keep things really simple.
It's not simple enough.
I like to keep things, you know, I love markets work, but yeah. You got to keep it simple. And I mean, here, I have a very simplistic view of communities. Now, my community is much smaller than yours, so you have a lot more complexity where you are, but I think of it really simple. What I find, and this is from the time I was a kid to the time I was assistant secretary, to the time I was an investment advisor, you know, 10% of the people at any given time within a community are net energy plus. I know you guys, you're hugely net energy plus. Mm-hmm. So they're always giving more than they're taking. And then you have a certain amount of people who are just busy and or they're sick. And, you know, they're just following everybody around. They follow whoever's in charge. And then you have 10%. You know, God love them, that are net energy minus. They're just throwing drugs into the neighborhood. Hard narcotics, let me be specific, hard narcotics. Mm-hmm. Or they're engaged in financial fraud, or they're just trouble. And the secret in life is to move the blood to the heart and lungs and get it out of the toes and the fingers. So obviously you want things in balance, but you want to move the blood away from the net energy minus people and get it up to the net energy plus people. So the best thing is, in your neighborhood, you define who's net energy plus, and then go to them and say, how can we help? And moreover, how can we start to look at how the money works in a way that increases your income, reduces your expenses, lowers your risk, gives you energy, you know, and I'll be really blunt, gets you laid on Friday night, whatever. because we need to get 80% of the people following the net energy plus. And you laugh, Dr. Future, but let me just point out that when I was working on doing these turnarounds, we were working in poor neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. Finally, my systems guys came to me and said, look, and can I be really blunt on the radio? They said, you know, who gets the girls at the software company? It's the one, you know, who's running the operating systems, or it's the one. And they said, if you go to these neighborhoods, the guys who get the girls are the drug dealers. So if you're going to go in and say, let's start computer learning centers and let's get the neighborhood turned around, then you got to figure out how the girls are going to find the guys starting the computer training centers more attractive than the guys doing drugs. Hmm. So it gets bad. And Sunny and I talked about this in 2008. How do you get Lisa Strada going? And if you look at Spike Lee's latest movie, he's saying the same thing. How do we get the Lisa Strada thing going again? So, you know,
and of course, for our, let's just make the reference a little more clear. Lysistrata, of course, is the classic Greek play where the women basically hold themselves up in a castle and said to the men, no more nookie until you stop going to war.
Right. So, well, look at our economy. So many people are making money by doing things that harm.
Making money by doing harm instead of making money by doing good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the question is, how can we help everybody switch? And it all gets down to incentives.
Well, great home-based income models, perhaps.
Well, incentive systems. There you go. That's it. So we want to tie the rewards to the behaviors that we want more of.
Right. So it's part of making, and that's why you got to get into the government money. Now, one of the ways of doing this is new technologies creating lots of opportunities to change things.
Yes, like robots, autonomous cars, 3D printers. Right. Radically. Right. Now, how are these?
And all of these things can make small business. I mean, these things should be radically decentralized. So the question is, how do you take these technologies and apply it in a way that really helps small business get back in the game?
Yeah, so we can benefit, create a bigger pie for us all. Well, our last minute, how can we find out more, Catherine? What's your website, Solari? Solari.com? Is that it?
Yeah, we want to direct our fans to you.
Our website is Solari.com. We have a lot of resources on the website. We're trying to filter the news. I published the Solari report, which I backed into because people kept asking me questions. And finally, I said, I have to organize this. So it's a way of asking questions first and foremost for my clients, but now we have subscribers all over the world. And what we're trying to do is provide you with an understanding of what's going on in the economy. Our focus is more on money and the geopolitics that impact money.
Yeah.
And what to, you know, both at the macro level and the micro level, but give you a real picture of how the world really works and sort out the news as well as what's happening covertly. So your world can make sense and you don't have to go crazy navigating the difference between the official reality and reality.
Gotcha. And you also take input. You're sort of paying attention to the new stuff that's coming in and new ways in which the world is redefining itself.
Part of the economy is going gangbusters.
Yeah.
And we all want to be part of that.
Well,
listen,
not
thanks
the...
so much, Catherine. It's been a great...
Well, sort of.
One of the things I know, what I know is you will be a part of it.
You will be part of it.
I am. Allies
and you
of
will.
Goodness
United. You all will.
All right, folks. Catherine Austin Fitz here on the Dr. Future
Thank
Show
you so much
on KSCO
for
Santa Cruz. Thank you so much, Catherine.
We
great
appreciate
talking
your
with input. You. Solari.